We need something.
All right. Let me paraphrase back to you the question, and then you'll tell me if this is what you're asking. You're asking me how can I, when I'm in a reel of not being genuine, okay, get to the ideal of being genuine? That's what you're asking, right? That's called a lifetime's work. That's the process from reel to ideal. Right now I'm holding where there's no way in a million years that I could convince myself or Hashem that the reason why I want Panasa or whatever it is I'm asking for, because it's for him. I don't want him to be in pain because I'm depriving him the ability to give. Yeah? Right now I want Panasa because I don't want the headache. Yeah? I'd like ultimately one day to be able to not want anything and only want because it's good for Hashem. But right now I'm holding where, you know what, I don't even understand what it means Hashem's pain. So how do I get from where I am to the ideal? That's what you're asking, right? Fine. Good kasha. That's the same kasha you have on every aspect of your life. This is where I'm holding. This is the ideal. I'm very far from the ideal. How do I get from real to ideal? Good. That's a personal question that can never be answered in public. Depends on your real. Depends on a whole bunch of factors and situations that are very unique only to you. No one else can have the same journey as you. So that's just to come in and you have to do this. Yeah, that's a very good question. This is where I'm holding. This is where the Torah says I should be holding, whatever area it is. Can you help me design a strategy of how to get from real to ideal? I'll give you the klal. Yeah? Whatever works, that's what you use. As long as it's awesome. If it's awesome, then obviously you can't. But if it works, use it. Now, what works for your particular problem? I don't know, you have to sit down with somebody to question it. It's a very unique process that you have to design for yourself. Because no one else is standing where you're standing, and no one else really is expected to get to your ideal, and therefore the journey is always going to look very different for everybody. What you can do is share with another person some of your experiences if you've been down a similar journey. You can kind of, you know, you can share with a guy, you know, like, that's what like travelers do. A guy that's been down this journey before can tell you, you know, say, don't buy that shop, the guy's a bit of a crook. You know, tourists do that. You know, you meet at the hotel, you know, backpackers, they kind of meet at the youth hospital and they compare notes. The guy that's been there for 3 days already, the big mumcha, you know. So, and the guy that's just arrived, like, he's a grenner, you know, so. He doesn't know what he's doing. So they're always asking somebody that's a bit further along the journey than him. That's what we have to do. And the Siddur Shesharim says it right at the beginning. You know, if you're walking around lost, you'll never get out of the maze. So ask somebody who's been through the maze before, how do you get out of it? You've got to find somebody who, you know. At the end of the day, that process is something you work out yourself. It's a very personal thing. Very personal.
What different soul principles that would apply to all of us?
Depends what ideal you're shooting for.
Isn't all the same ideal?
No, he's trying to work on feeling Hashem's pain. I'm trying to work on not being an anger addict. Those are very, you know, I'm trying to work on getting out of bed in the morning. You're right. At some point, the shoresh of all those issues is one thing. I don't believe in God. You know, but that's too. It's too abstract for us. We're trying to be very practical. At the practical level, you're right. The basic 13 steps a person has to make to do tshuva are the same for everybody. But how each person and which step and when is a very, very personal process. That's why you said mashgichim in yeshivas. The Beruchim was so insightful that he knew exactly what each person needed, when, how, and what. Ruchim's insight into other people was legendary. I mean, it was bordering on Ruach HaKodesh. Today, the demand is much different on us. You don't have mashgichim like that anymore. So it's a much more personal toil than to pick yourself up on your own bootstraps. But like Avraham Avinu, didn't have a mashgich either. You learned Hashem Va'eva, but you know, got the basics, whatever, but the Ikka Avoida of knowing which journey to take and how to take it was a very personal journey. But you're right, we do have basic principles, we do have general tools, we have a sefer called the Mesillas Yesharim, which is a handbook of how to go from real to ideal that himself defines the Busa process. the process of going from real to ideal. So, yeah. My only problem I have with Masil is showing me if he's real seems to be like a very far-fetched ideal, you know. A hard time trying to work out who he had in mind. We sat down and thought, yeah, I'm going to write a guidebook on how to become a novi. So, like, let's see who I have in mind. Like, who would be the audience? You know, who would be my main... You know, when you write a book, you want to know, like, how much of an audience is there? How many guys are going to buy this book, yeah? So, I mean, it's impossible to think of a Jewish hunter that doesn't have Masil Yisroel in it. But if that's really what the Masil Yisroel had in mind, I mean, who did the Ramchal think about? Eh? It's like, I can't imagine that he had me in mind. When I go through the sefer, it's like, he sat down and thought about me, where I'm holding, that this sefer would be useful for me. Clear. It's some serious insight into how incredibly great we human beings are. That's the mark. Toma Devorah as well. Sefer Toma Devorah just shows you how great a human being is. In Kelm, in the famous Musa school of Kelm, so they never learned Musa on Shabbos, because Musa can make you a little bit sad in certain aspects when you start working on getting in touch with who you really are. There's things about yourself you don't like. So it can drag you down a little bit before it gives you a big simcha, yeah? Before you start making changes. So in Kelm, they never learned Musa on Shabbos, because you're not allowed to ever be sad on Shabbos. So they used to learn Sefer Toma Devorah. And Musa Sefer called Toma Devorah, written by the Ramchal. It's a Kabbalistic Sefer, but it's a very useful Musa tool as well. And that can't make you sad, because all that Sefer shows you is how great a human being is. Godless Adam. So that's what they used to learn on Shabbos. I learn them in terms of why I get depressed. It's meant for a normal, healthy, emotional human being, so maybe that's why. For them in Kelm, they were able to learn it and get besimcha. No, but it's really, it's unbelievable. It shows you how you can be like God. That's what it shows you. It shows you how the 13 principles of Rachamim, the 13 midas of Rachamim of God, can be emulated by a human being. That's what it shows you. It shows you how to emulate each of the 13 midas of Rachamim and become like God at that aspect. So scintillating how much we actually, you know, how short we set ourselves. You know, we're just like, Yud Gimel midas of Rachamim, you know, Yom Kippur, that darga of Hashem, you can actually learn to imitate and live your life like that. And there's an excellent translation in English, by the way, if you ever want to look at that sefer. I highly recommend. Ignore, there's a lot of Kabbalistic terminology there which you can just ignore. It's not important. You're not going to be the master of the Toma Devorah if you do that. But it's a very useful sefer just for its Musa content, and there's much, much Musa content in there, and you don't have to understand all the little Kabbalistic stuff, which is... The Ramak's Kabbalah is not learned by anybody today. There's nobody that learns the Ramak's Kabbalah, so don't worry about it. Just ignore it and go weiter. The Ramak was the last of the Mekubalim that learned the Kabbalah of the Rishonim. After that, there was the Arizal. He handed the Masorah to the Arizal, and from the Arizal on, we learn the Arizal's Kabbalah. We don't learn the Kabbalah of the Rishonim anymore. Because it's just not... That's why the Arizal made the Kabbalah accessible again, because it has been lost. The Ramchal was the Ramak, Ramosha Karavira, was at the interface of those two things. His Kabbalah is very, very complex. So don't let that interfere with you. Just when you see words, you know, that he's using or whatever, just go by it. What resonates, resonates, but that's not the Ikka. The Ikka is, and it's used as a Musa Sefer, and plenty people that don't recommend you learn Kabbalah recommend you use that Sefer. The Bane Musa used to learn that during the 10 days of Tshuva. In order to get ready for the Yud Gimel Ikarim, because when we scream the Yud Gimel Ikarim, and not Yud Gimel, Yud Gimel Midas Rachamim on Slichas and on Yom Kippur, the screaming isn't what gives the tshuva. It's the understanding of those Midas and undertaking to emulate them that really does the job. So the Toma Devorah is one sefer that really prepares and sensitizes you to what those Midas are. Yeah, fascinating sefer. Alright, we're on Reish Ayin Beis. So we're understanding how everything we have is really just a deposit from Hashem. It's not really ours. Understanding that the child that I'm raising is not really my child. It's a Kosh Bochus child who has entrusted me with the responsibility of raising changes very much the way I relate and deal with my children and everything else. My possessions, everything. It was all just things Hashem gave to me in order to either raise for him, or these are the tools I need in order to do the job that I need. I'm just a shliach of Hashem, but everything I do here is of shlichus for Hashem. That's what we got up to. Did we do the last paragraph in Reish Ayin Beis? Oh, we said that a person doesn't get jealous, he doesn't get upset. On the contrary, he's very happy that Hashem chose him to raise his child. It's unbelievable. Hashem comes and says, listen, can you do me a favor? I've got this kid here. Well, why don't you look after this kid for me? Yeah. And you get a phone call from Rabbi Lashev. Who do you need a call? The phone is, you pick it up, hello? Yeah, this is Rabbi Lashev. Yeah. I heard about you, the wonderful machanach or whatever, I have a grandson is having a bit of problems. Would you mind taking my grandson under your wing? You bring him up. Yeah, you wouldn't be, yeah, can you imagine how, wow! Nothing would upset you today, that's for sure, yeah? Yeah, you get the picture? That's unbelievable, huh? The poiseh gadol wants me to raise his kid? We could put that on our brochure, you know? That's quite a powerful kiruv tool, you know? I mean, recruiting tool, you know? That's like, wow, we've arrived! Kosh Baruch Hu says to you, why don't you do me a favor just to go after this kid for me? I always hold that's a big simcha. When you have a child, what's a simcha? If you think about that logically, there's no simcha in having a child. When a child's born, what's the simcha? Do you know what this child's going to be? Do you know who this is? This could be the next Menashe. Who's this child? Do you know anything about him? I mean, like one of the stuff, this could be the biggest source of aggravation you've ever had in your life. Why are you so happy? No, serious. Why are you so happy? What is this? There's a lot of potential here. There's an enormous risk. You should be terrified. Abject terror. So I always find that one of the big simchas here is because there's a sense of, hey, of course, Baruch Hu's asked me to look after his child for you. The simcha is that this baby here is because Baruch Hu talking to me. Hey, I'm giving you, I need you to look after the child for me. That's the simcha. The simcha of having a child is irrational. If you just had a baby, it's partially irrational. You don't have to agree with me. This is my own interrogation. An incredible simcha you feel when you have a child. Awesome. Ain't simcha the day let me there. What's the simcha? You just bought futures and you have no idea where these stock are going. Yeah? You could have just bought your own, you could have just bought the biggest bankruptcy bundle of stock here. Yeah? You have no idea what's going to be. You bought futures. That's what that is. The guy buys futures, he gets so happy. When you sell your futures, you make a profit. Then you're a simcha. When you buy futures, you don't sleep. And never keep you out of sleep either. So but there is an enormous simcha. So yeah, obviously the big simcha is the potential that's here, that's tomul here, the opportunity, whatever. It's my own insight. It was part of the personal experience. It was part of the simcha here is, you know, Hashem, you chose me out of all these people to look after this child. It's pretty big. The simcha is because of the kesher that I had from Hashem. It's a kiss from Hashem. That's like a vote of confidence from Hashem. Because now I'm raising the king, the king of kings' child. So that was the this is a very, very important sugya today. Min akudat hashkaf zu anu mitkadmin the makuda amukri yosef. Keep building here on the principle of this hashkaf. Now that we internalize it, we understand it. Let's go one step deeper. It's a mispar shanim. It's a mainly libgosh bezug horim asher sheichlu es bonam haput. Let's chat. We went to visit a couple asher sheichlu es bonam haput. What does that mean?
You mean they lost?
Or the miscarriage, or whatever, stillbirth, whatever it's called. No, it was extra child. One more line. Who tova bribricha hapratis shemabatim? He drowned in a swimming pool that they had in the backyard. One of the slides. Shah bricha yepetuach. Hayeled nichnas l'sham belo nasim. Tova, he went in and the gate was messed up and he drowned off one of the slides. Hayrav hayu achulim berikshe ashama.
Those
you understand, the guilt that the parents had and whatever, that they felt that they killed their own child. Choshev Ladar, you got to meet a couple like this? You got to meet a couple like this? How did you do this? Choshev Ladar, you know how he does it, because he knows it's not him. All his sorrow comes out very clearly when he gets these impossible situations that he's in. He gets out the way, and Hashem kind of takes care of it in the most unbelievable way. You can only do this if you know that it's not you that's going to have to help this couple. You know, where do you see this in Chumash? Yosef. The most important lessons you'll ever learn is from Yosef in the pit, with the Sarah Mashka and the Sarah Mafia. He comes down one morning and he notices that these two guys are a little bit sad. You know, lesson number one, you have to notice what's going on around you. Even when you're in a dungeon prison, yeah, there happen to be two goyim in the room that don't look so happy, Yosef actually notices. Next step, he goes up to them and says, why are you downcast? It's not enough to just notice, you actually just go ask him, what can I help? So they say to him, we had a dream and we don't know how to pitaron it, we don't know how to interpret it. So what does Yosef say? Sorry, I can't help you. The La Hashem pitaron. Hashem is the one that interprets dreams. Sapanali, tell me your dream. Why? You just told me you can't help me, you can't interpret dreams, Hashem interprets dreams, so why should I tell you my dream? Why is Yosef saying, Sapanali, tell me your dream? Big kasha, no? You see a guy, he's all bummed out. You say to him, what's the matter? He says, no, I had a dream, I don't interpret it, whatever. You say to him, eh? Can't help you, you know? Tell me your dream. He's some curious, or it's some Yosef, you know, like, you know, yeah, tell me your dream, you know? You see someone downtrodden, even if you can't help them, you don't leave them alone. Maybe I can help. Tell me, maybe I can help. Why does Yosef say that? Because he knows he's not going to do anything here. Hashem's going to take care of this. I can't help. But that doesn't mean I'm not allowed, that doesn't mean I'm as much as not to do anything. You still have to try help. So when you get called into an impossible situation like this, someone says, will you come meet a couple that's sitting shiva for a child that drowned, Rahman al-Zan, and they think they're guilty, they're blaming themselves because they didn't lock the gate, etc., etc., etc. Will you come meet the family and make them feel a bit better? How do you go in there? Hashem apitarot. So finally, that's how you do it. You never walk away from me. You never walk away from a person that's in pain. But in order to help them, you have to know that you can't help them. This is too big. How do you counsel a couple like this? So if Rahman al-Islam, whatever, you had a similar situation, tuck, 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 you can go talk, whatever, okay, that's already something else. But if you haven't, how do you deal with it? So besides anything else, it's a big lesson just from the Sefer, it's just the mice are out, and he actually deals with this stuff.